This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning. Happy Friday to you. It is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Back in the NBA now. Oh, this is going to be good. All right, did you watch it yesterday? Did you enjoy the atmosphere of Orlando? I know we had some scrimmages, but many of you didn't watch the scrimmages. I get it. You just wanted the real thing. You're waiting for Thursday just to see what it would look like. Did you like the digital fans that were around the arena on the sides? Did you like the piped-in music of what the players would have heard had they been in their home stadiums? And did you like the basketball? I mean, after a couple of months off here, well, like 4 months off, did you like the basketball? The basketball was sloppy, I'll be honest with you. I mean, outside of Anthony Davis, who had a nice 34-point night, LeBron played pretty well, Kawhi and Chris Paul played pretty well. The basketball in both games was pretty sloppy, but hey, I don't care. Listen, to me, this is you getting into not only game speed, but game shape. 4 months off is a lot, and it wasn't as if these guys could have gotten together and worked out a ton leading up into the season. Like sometimes you see during the off season where, yeah, we'll maybe get together some guys at the gym and keep our conditioning program up and running. They had to do things on their own. They come back. They get put in this quarantine. They're dealing with that. They're dealing with the idea of being away from their families, how they're going to deal with it. Then they're going to get back into shape. I think the basketball early on is not going to be great, but it's going to be there. It's going to count. Zion Williamson, for example, is way out of shape. Played 15 minutes sparingly, 13 points. Wasn't really a strong presence in the post, but nevertheless, he's going to get back into it. We'll see how long the Pelicans last, if they can even make a run to get that final spot in the Western Conference after yesterday's loss to Utah. I don't know. But it was good to see it back. It was good to see basketball come to have a plan, enact that plan, and have some sort of product on the court. We'll talk more about what we saw yesterday on the court between the Lakers and the Clippers and the Jazz and the Pelicans. And is it working so far with two games in? Plus, some more news out of Major League Baseball that is disturbing, and the SEC has made its college football decision, all coming up this hour. It's Tony D. Ron Culver, Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio Network. So NBA, two games in the books of many down the road in this bubble experiment, and two close games as the Jazz beat the Pelicans and then the Lakers beat the Clippers. So there's some observations here. I want to get to them. So if you watched the games last night, so here's basically my night last night. I took the family out to dinner. I know this sounds, look, my wife and I both work, but I took the family out to dinner. It was my decision. I paid. And we went early because my wife got out early. So we went, we were like senior citizens on that, what do they call it? Like the early bird dinner when we went. It was kind of odd. Like the restaurant was empty. We kind of laid back. A couple of elderly folks were in there getting their 4:30 dinner. So when I got
the discount?
We got my son's employee discount, which was cool. But I still paid like $125 for dinner. We had appetizers, steaks. We got some dessert. I mean, it was pretty hefty. I don't know why I was feeling so generous to the family that normally drives me nuts this time of year, but I was. I was feeling very good.
No, you know why. You said it earlier. You said it during the break.
We don't have very many moments like this.
More moments because you're sending your kid off to school.
Kid's going off to college in a couple of weeks. So I got home and I watched the ending of the Jazz-Pelicans game, and then I watched a good portion of the Lakers-Clippers last night. So a couple of observations. One, as I said earlier, the games were really kind of sloppy. I mean, there were turnovers everywhere. There were some good performances, don't get me wrong. I mean, Anthony Davis was fantastic last night. But overall, teams are going to have to get working again and find their rhythm again. I'm totally cool with it. I don't think the basketball was terrible by any means, but it was sloppy. But here's the thing. At the end of the Jazz-Pelicans game, even though there was no fans in the stands, and even though everything was very artificial, the fact of the matter is that late in that game, it was very close, and it felt there was suspense there. You know this game is extremely important to New Orleans. They're 3.5 back. They've got 8 regular season games left to try to make a push. They lose. It's a big step backwards for them. And you felt the intensity of the game. It didn't matter that it wasn't at the Smoothie King Center, or there wasn't fans on their seat coming out of a timeout, or you couldn't hear because it was deafening. There was a level of intensity in that game that did come through. The same thing with the Clippers and the Lakers. There were moments where, despite the fact that there was no Staples Center roaring like crazy, there was intensity in the game. So I liked that. I think whoever is putting this bubble together in terms of making it look as best as it possibly could, given the fact that there are no fans, deserves every accolade and a raise by the league. It's a good look. I think it's a good look. I know the people have some problems with the virtual fans, whether or not that's a distraction. But as we saw in the scrimmage, and you definitely saw it if you haven't been paying attention to the scrimmages and just getting into this game, this does not look like what we thought it was going to look like when we saw empty arena. When we heard that, there is a real cavernous feel to an empty arena that they tried to minimize. And they did it good with the right lighting. They did it good with sort of the signage that surrounds that kind of surrounds the court. They kept it intimate. It does have a summer league feel to it. There's no question about that. When you hear the squeaking of the sneakers and you don't hear the general atmosphere, that just lends itself to a different feel than if you are broadcasting at a location in a city across America. But it didn't have sort of that empty arena feeling that went with this. The NBA also needs to get credit for a couple of things here in terms of its production value. So the Lakers got introduced by their very famous public address announcer who recorded their introduction, and the NBA used that. They tried to make the court as homey as they possibly could for the home team. They tried to make it so you saw on the television screen, you saw like the virtual logo of the advertisement that would be there. They pumped in very familiar organ music. Anything that riled up the crowd at their location, they brought it into the game. They did their best. I mean, it's not going to be the same, obviously, but they did their best. And overall, I thought they did really well. I absolutely thought it was fine. I think this is the way it's going to be. Will it get tiring after a while to see kind of the digital fans? Maybe. Will we really miss the crowd in the playoffs where you have really big games? Of course we are. There is nothing they can do about that. I mean, there is no feeling that is like when 18,000 people are right behind you. They are feeling it. They are with you every step of the way. You feed off that energy. You can rally for runs. You can hit the big shot. You can cause your turnovers. There is an element to home court advantage in the postseason that is not going to be replicated no matter how much they make it feel like you're really at the Staples Center or you're really at the Smoothie King Center. It's not going to work that way. The other thing, and this is going to be more political, is everyone was kneeling and everyone is wearing Black Lives Matter shirts and everybody's wearing the slogans on the back. The NBA is all in on this and they're not turning back. And I know on Twitter last night there were a lot of people not happy with this, but the NBA is not going to listen to that. They're not going to cave on this. They're not going to ask their players not to do this. They're not going to say, "Well, we got to protect certain fan base and their sensitivity to this issue, especially when it comes to the national anthem." They're way, way past that. That's a business decision that they've made. They are not turning around. Where 4 years ago when Colin Kaepernick knelt, it worried other commissioners. What if my players do this? What if my what will happen to the fan base of my player, of any players on our team? You heard the league say no kneeling for the anthem 4 years ago. Worried about a segment of the population that would tune out. Worried about how it would affect sponsors. Worried about how it would affect season tickets for teams where season tickets were available. Where season tickets were struggled to sell. There was a lot of concern from that 4 years ago. Those concerns are out the window. The NBA does not care about this. So, again, you can go on Twitter. You can say how you're never going to watch. You're never going to participate in any of their products or whatever. You're not going to buy any jerseys. You're not going to buy any gear. You're not going to participate in any online endeavors with this, you know, fantasy basketball or whatever. They're fine with it. They have absolutely all in on what the players are trying to say through this social movement. So that being said, we are off and running, and we have got 8 games for every single team. And when this thing is wrapped up, we'll have a postseason, and this is what it's going to look like. What you saw last night is exactly the way it's going to look when the NBA championship is held and Game 7 occurs, and it's the biggest game of the season, and the winner takes home the Larry O'Brien trophy. What you get is what you get. That's what you have. There won't be confetti raining down with a huge fan base screaming and hollering, and there won't be outside the arena, there won't be a celebration or a party. They'll celebrate amongst themselves. Some of their peers will be there to watch. That's about it. That's what you're getting.
They'll probably take to the streets in their own city.
Well, what I'm saying is outside the arena.
Right, outside the arena.
There's not going to be that feeling of what's going on here is going on outside. This is what you're getting. This is the product you're getting. This is the atmosphere that it's created. Like I said at the beginning, I think they've done a good job. I mean, this could have been 20,000 seats. Well, I don't know how much it holds. I think it's maybe 15,000 seats. 15,000 empty seats, and that's what you see, right? Like in a summer league game. But that's not what you're getting. You're getting some sort of feeling of intimacy in terms of its enclosure, feeling of, that there is some, piped-in noise in some capacity. But the basketball is the basketball. And once they play, they play. And we'll see how it goes from there. So as this thing ramps up, we'll see how it is. Now, look, they're going to be playing games all day, all the time. That's the other cool thing about this. Because of the amount of games that have to be put in, you're going to get games in the afternoon. You're going to get games all through the evening. And it's going to be every single day until they get to the postseason. And they're going to figure out that schedule.
And that is kind of exciting because that's that NCAA feel that we're going to get.
Right, right.
It's just so, the same. We're going to see the same court, different electronic backgrounds, I guess different electronic virtual fans.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're going to get 6 games today that start at, 2:30 Eastern time. So from 2:30 all the way through to the evening, you're going to get NBA basketball.
And they only have the one court.
You're going to love it. Yeah. They're just gonna play there, and that so you're right. It's gonna have that feeling of when you watch the NCAA tournament that Thursday and Friday where it's basketball all the time. That's what you're gonna feel with the NBA, and they're gonna do this for a while, again until the playoffs start, until everybody plays their 8 games. But like I said, the action on the court was sloppy at times, but it was exciting at times. Look, Zion Williamson's got to get in shape. It's unfortunate that he's not in shape. It's unfortunate he had to leave the bubble to miss some conditioning and workouts. They put him on some limited minutes. He played only 15. He had 13 points. He wasn't really a huge factor in the game against the Jazz, but Anthony Davis was. There's a small lineup for the Clippers. Anthony Davis took advantage of it, scored 34 points. LeBron had some moments where he looked really good. There's some moments where he like everybody else, got a little sloppy, but that's expected. But the stars of that game, they played. I mean, they played very well. But, it's going to take some time before the turnovers are diminished. I mean, the Jazz and the Pelicans combined for 40 turnovers. That was the big question in the Clippers-Lakers game was the turnovers, how big of a factor that was. One other thing I would suggest, and this would be my suggestion to the broadcasters like Stan Van Gundy and whoever is doing the games. Stop reminding fans at home that the crowd would have gone nuts of a particular play. We get it. We get it. We don't need to be reminded of that. When there's a big alley-oop, you don't have to say, oh, they would have been on their feet at the Staples Center for that one. Yeah, it's just, look, we get it. We don't need to be reminded where we're at with this pandemic in sports. We're all trying to deal with the fact that it's not normal. We're all trying to deal with the fact that, yeah, it's not going to feel the same. But we are glad it's back in some capacity. The fact that there was an alley-oop that would have had the Staples Center rocking, we're kind of glad at least we're getting that, even if you're piping in automatic crowd. That's going to get a cliche that's going to get overused if without anything else to say about it. So my suggestion is find another way to expand on that particular play. All right, so we'll talk more about the NBA as we continue along this morning, as we get now that it is up and running. But there is some disturbing news more out of baseball. The Phillies have been shut down at their stadium. Baseball's still moving along with this, but will it get to a point where we are going to look at the schedule and say, yeah, we need a little bit more meat to this? That's coming up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, O'Reilly Auto Parts will help make your auto repair, maintenance, and restoration projects easier, so when your car isn't stopping like it used to, the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the brake parts and supplies you need to do the job right the first time. Now, for a limited time, save 15% when you buy any set of Brake Best pads and 2 Brake Best rotors. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, so we've reached Friday. When was the last time the Phillies played baseball? Over the weekend? They had the games with the Yankees canceled this week.
Yeah.
Because remember, they were the tipping point, right? They were the point where the Marlins were like, yeah, a bunch of us got the virus. Ha.
Well, I mean, that's...
And then they were like, oh, it happened in Philadelphia. So they had to shut games down. And now a couple of other people have gotten the virus. The workers at Citizens Bank Park. So the series with the Blue Jays got postponed. When are they going to play baseball again?
Well, I mean, that's what's kind of funny, right? I mean, the last time they played was against the Marlins.
Right.
And so all eyes were on us about the Marlins being canceled. The Phillies inadvertently got canceled too.
Exactly. So the Marlins were the team that everyone got the virus with. Phillies, who have no players have tested positive on the Phillies. This is all outside of them. People that they've done business with, if you will, right? The Marlins, big virus outbreak with the Marlins while they were in Philadelphia, so they can't play the Yankees until this is figured out. Then they find out some members of the staff of Citizens Bank Park have gotten the virus, so their Blue Jays series has gotten postponed, and so they haven't been playing baseball since Sunday. So this is another issue for Major League Baseball to have to deal with. I said this yesterday, and I'm starting to lean like maybe this could be a problem. Yesterday I said, look, Major League Baseball is just going to have to come to the American public and go, look, I know you're used to everybody playing the same amount of games, and that's how we determine the postseason, but that's not going to happen this year. We're not going to be running around the country trying to figure out how to make up these games. Eventually, we might have to get to a point where a team might play 51 games, and that's just the way it's going to be. We might have a team play 52, 53, 57. It's nothing we can do about it. You know, we just can't make up all of them. If you lose a week of games to this virus, we're not doing a doubleheader every single day forever, you know, in a day here. That's just going to have to be the way it's going to have to be. But there will be a point if there are more stories like this, and we're only a week into the season, but if there are more outbreaks like this and more stories like this, I wonder how much meat has to be on the bone of the schedule before you can have a postseason that's not feeling like it's been tainted in some capacity. I mean, what if teams are playing 48 games? Like, what if teams are playing 50 games? I mean, does that number matter? Or if somebody else plays 60, do those numbers matter? Or are we just glad we've got something and just get it to the finish line? I don't care if you're crawling. I don't care if your knees are bloody. I don't care if your hands are torn up. I don't care if your face is dripping with sweat. Just cross that finish line in whatever shape you're crossing that finish line. If in the end the Yankees are hoisting the trophy and they only played 47 regular season games, or the Phillies are doing it and they only played 50 games, does it matter? Or do we have to say, hey, let's either convince us this is going to be okay, or figure out a way to make these games up in some capacity. Does one test by one employee make everything shut down? Does two? Does three? What exactly is happening here? Because I can see this happening all day, every day with this league, what they're doing by not being in a bubble. I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised it hasn't happened in the other two geographical regions already. I mean, luckily, we've only had this story that's got sort of a two-degree separation, right? The Marlins had an outbreak while in Philadelphia. The Phillies have canceled games because the Marlins had the outbreak in Philadelphia. The Marlins are canceling games because they had an outbreak while they were in Philadelphia. But the Yankees, who were supposed to be in Philadelphia, moved on to play Baltimore. They're doing okay. And all of this stuff is just centering around the weekend series between the Phillies and the Marlins. So we're not, Major League Baseball is not dealing with, well, the Marlins and the Phillies had a problem. Oh, and so did the Atlanta Braves and the Tampa Bay Rays. That was a mess. And so did Arizona and the Giants. And oh, by the way, did you hear about what happened with the Royals and the Cubs? They're not doing that. Right now, 1 week into the Major League Baseball season, the primary focus has been what happened last weekend between Miami and Philadelphia. And what happened there has led to cancellations of games involving those two teams that were involved. So it hasn't trickled to Boston. It hasn't moved again to Tampa or Atlanta or anybody else in the East. And nobody in the West and nobody in the Central has had any problems with this so far. So that's the good news. The bad news is the feeling of, is this going to be the consistent thing that Major League Baseball has to deal with every single day, all the way through to the end of this? And what happens when you've done all of this, and you've done all the work, and you've played the doubleheaders, and you've tried so badly to get everybody up to 60, and you reach a point where it's October, and whoops, four employees at Yankee Stadium have got the virus. And now what do you do with the opening round of the Yankees-Oakland series or whatever? Do you move it to Oakland? Do you move it somewhere else? Do you play at Citi Field if it's vacant? Do you just find any ballpark anywhere at all amongst all of the ballparks to play in? That should be the plan, right? But what if 15 Yankee players have it as they head to the postseason? And you're just casually canceling playoff games left and right? All right, look, I don't want to get too far ahead because I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get there in the fall. But isn't this what we're seeing so far from Major League Baseball? One, something that people predicted. Two, something that people want answers to because they do want to know what the season is going to look like when this happens. I mean, you get some positive tests and everything shuts down? Okay, that makes sense, right? That would make sense. But is everything hanging on by that thread? Is all of this just hanging on by that thread? How many players will it take to cancel four or five games in a playoff series before you have everything back under control? How many players? One? Five? Three? Ten? What's the answer? If you have a best of five series set to start on a Monday and two players on the Red Sox or whatever, whatever team is participating has the virus, can they be quarantined? Can tests be done and the series start? Or does it take 3 or 4 days? Does it take 5 days? Do we cancel this playoff series? I mean, what do we do? So I think Rob Manfred, who must have known this kind of thing was going to happen to his league, at some point is going to have to start addressing this if it does get and expand, if it does flow into the other geographical areas, and it does become a consistent problem.
Do you think in hindsight he's sitting there going, man, I wish I created a bubble?
Yeah, especially if this NBA thing goes off well.
Yeah, I mean, which it has so far.
So far, so good.
You know, think about it, they've been there, at least 3 weeks now?
Early July, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they've had all these scrimmages, they've had interactions, they even dealt with, some people getting Postmates to deliver to the hotel, or Lou Williams' little journey.
And they did all their tests, and no one had the virus.
No one.
So if they pull this off, yeah, the NFL and Major League Baseball are going to try to play without a bubble. They're going to have to deal with this week in and week out, this conversation week in and week out.
Yeah, especially when you saw the MLS was successful. Yep. NHL, I'm going to assume, is going to be successful.
I think so, too. Coming up, what the SEC is going to do this college football season and why it's actually brilliant next.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'd love to hear from you. Blue Emu, no chill, no burn, no odor. Hey, it's the number one selling emu oil brand in America. If you've got some tired muscles and joints, we all have them because we all do work all the weekend, get around the house. Get Blue Emu. It'll help you because unlike competitors, they don't use capsaicin. That's chili pepper and menthol, which is that ingredient for the cold sensation. No chill, no burn, no odor. It's all good with Blue Emu, the number one selling emu oil brand in America. It's also made in America, Blue Emu. So the SEC has made its decision. The SEC is going the same route as other conferences. They will only play within itself. Every SEC school, and there are 14 of them, will now play a 10-game schedule this year, all within the conference. So there will be no warm-up games against Wofford and Chattanooga, and there will be no kickoff classics against USC or North Carolina or anyone else. You are also not going to get, and I think this is very important, you are not going to get some traditional rivalry games that the SEC plays against schools outside the SEC within its own state or region. For example, Florida and Florida State will not be played this year. South Carolina and Clemson will not be played. Kentucky and Louisville, that's not going down either. Georgia, Georgia Tech, goodbye. So those games are off the board. Now, why is that interesting? It's interesting because the ACC, which just let Notre Dame in, actually created a plan to allow one non-conference game on their schedule. Why did they do that? They did that for two reasons. One is obvious. They wanted to preserve those rivalries. They know how important the South Carolina-Clemson game is to the Clemson fan base and to the state of South Carolina. Same thing with Florida-Florida State. They know that the Seminole fans love that game and don't want to lose it. Georgia Tech, same thing with playing Georgia, right? Same thing with the Governor's Cup between Louisville and Kentucky. I also think they left it open for another reason, and I think it's something, Ron, you and I talked about with Clemson all last year, which was Clemson was undefeated, but at times didn't look great, right? And there was a concern that if Clemson were to lose at any point during its season, that they wouldn't be in the top four. And I think that the ACC loved the idea of at least having some non-conference games, especially if a number of them are going after the SEC, wanting to play teams in the SEC, just to allow a little bit of wiggle room that you can still have a schedule. Because the ACC is very, it's top thin and then bottom weak. I mean, there's some bad teams in the ACC. And they don't get the benefit of the doubt like other conferences if you have that one really, really tough road loss against a number of, you know, your competition within your conference that's tough. You could forgive a really good Georgia team going on the road and losing at Auburn, for example. But you can't forgive a loss to, let's say, North Carolina State if you're Clemson. You can't afford a road loss at Wake Forest. You just can't. And as good as Duke has been at times, you can't afford to lose those games. You're just not going to get the benefit of the doubt if you are an ACC school that's coming from the top. And I think the conference wanted to sort of beef up its schedule and allowed the wiggle room. I think first and foremost, they wanted to preserve those rivalries. But I think they also wanted a little bit more meat on their schedule if they could. So they're very disappointed in how the SEC's decision came down. And granted, look, Will Muschamp, Dan Mullen. I mean, name your SEC coach that has a traditional rivalry game outside of the conference. They're not happy either. I mean, listen, Will Muschamp wants to play Clemson. As good as Clemson is, as good as Trevor Lawrence is, he knows it's important to his fan base. He knows that South Carolina, that's been a game that's been going on for 100 years. They don't want to lose it.
Yeah, not only that, but it's a break from the SEC because that's a power conference.
Yeah.
I mean, we always talk about, you know, the five power conferences. I mean, SEC is always at the top. These teams are going to beat each other up.
So here's a couple of things that make the move, but in this way, I think it's smart. They have decided not to start the season on time. So they're going to revise the schedule. So they're going to, because they have to add two conference games to everybody. But instead of going, well, we're just going to scrap the whole thing and we're going to start Labor Day weekend and we're going to start with a 10-game slate. The SEC is not going to play football until September 26th. So what do we say, 3 weeks in to the season? So 3 weeks into the normal season, that's when the SEC will play. And that's when they'll start. And they're going 11 weeks and everybody gets a bye. Now, the other thing that they did was they moved their conference championship game to December 19th. That game is still going to be in Atlanta. Now, why is this brilliant? I think it's brilliant for a couple of reasons. One, right now we are at July 31st, August 1st will be this weekend, and we are hitting the ground running with where this sport has to go if it's going to get started on time, quote unquote. Right, we've got plans in place to acclimate students and to get students ready, the athletes ready for the upcoming season. But as a parent of somebody who's going to a school, there is so much uncertainty that we're dealing with every single day when it comes to students going to campus. Right now, my son is going to the University of Florida. Everything's online. But he's still going to live in the dorm because there is going to still be student life, and he wants to experience that. He doesn't want to live with mom and dad his freshman year doing classes from my office. He wants to take online classes, but he wants to continue to figure out what student life will be like. Maybe it's limited. Maybe it'll get better. Maybe the virus will be under control and everything. There'll be more opportunities to do stuff. The SEC is playing a waiting game here, much like universities are. They're not jumping right into a college football season just as students are getting on campus. They're going to wait this thing out. They know that initially when you take 30, 40,000 kids and you shove them into a university, that things are going to spike. And you can try to tell your players to stay away from the social aspect of being a college athlete, but many of them are not going to follow that. So you've got to let it spike, let it come down, let it kind of get settled. Now you can play football. And because you're controlling your own conference, meaning you don't have to worry about what the ACC's protocol is and what the Pac-12 protocol is. You're only staying within your own conference. You have a better chance of pulling this off. You have a better chance of saying, look, we're going to have some kids test positive here, but we as a conference are controlling this. We've started about a month late. We've kept it within our own conference. And we don't have any outside influences coming in. We're not worried that we're going to be playing Clemson, for example, and their protocol may be completely and utterly different. So I think this is very smart on their part. Let the initial surge of college students and athletes who are going to be emerging, you know, the spike is going to be emerging on campuses. Let that happen and let that sort of settle. Then play football. Now, moving the conference championship game. Okay, now what about that? Now, the playoff committee is going to also be shuffling around itself, and they're going to be figuring out how to best put their product out. So they're not necessarily going to wait it, you know, going to stick to a timeline in terms of determining its four teams. They may wait to see where the SEC champion is. They may not, right? They may not. But when you play a conference schedule like the SEC, which is going to be 10 really tough games, if you go through all the 14 coaches, right, and you say, this has been, if you follow the SEC, you know this has been a big, huge debate for years.
a lot of conferences play 9 conference games, and the SEC has always played 8. And the big stipulation has always been, well, it's impossible, right? It's like, you really want us to play 9 games within this conference? Are you crazy? Do you know who has been the biggest proponent of changing it from 8 to 9? Do you know which one coach in the SEC has stood on the soapbox? And he has the most to lose. You want to take a guess of who that is?
Saban.
Saban has been the one that has said, we need to play 9 games. And all the other coaches are like, you're crazy, or that's easy for you to say, right, Mr. National Champion. But the other coaches want no business with that. They don't want to play 8, 9 conference games when 6 wins gets you a bowl game, which will kind of keep your the fans, the alumni at bay for a little bit. No, they want to play Wofford and Chattanooga and Louisiana Monroe and Kent State and Charleston. They want to play these schools a couple of times. They want to play those, get some wins under their belt before they head off to the Bahamas Bowl or whatever it is with their 6-6 lousy record. But Saban has always been the one that says, no, well, I want 9. I think 9 is important. We got to do 9. Now they get 10. Now here's the other thing. So the SEC conference has to now decide, well, we got to redo a schedule, right? All these schools had 8 games, and now we got to give them 2 more. Who gets Vanderbilt and who gets Alabama?
Right?
Like, if you're Florida and they add 2 more games to your schedule, and I don't know Florida's schedule off the top of my head, their SEC, but let's say they get added Alabama and I don't know, Mississippi State, and Georgia gets, Ole Miss, who's not expected to do much in Lane Kiffin's first year, and somebody else from the West that's not very good. Like you can see Dan Mullen losing his mind. Like, what are you talking about? I got to play. Wait a minute. So the conference has to figure it out. Now, listen, you're still getting the Iron Bowl. You're still getting the Egg Bowl between Mississippi and Mississippi State. You're still getting the Magnolia Bowl between Ole Miss and LSU. You're still going to get the third Saturday in October, the Tennessee-Alabama game. It may not be the third Saturday in October. I don't know how they're going to redo the schedule, but you're going to get that rivalry. You're going to get the cocktail party game. You're going to get, every inner SEC. One of the oldest football rivalries is Georgia-Auburn. Yeah, I don't know if that's on the schedule for this year or not, but you could. So you're going to be getting a different schedule, but the rivalries within the conference are going to stay. Just how is it going to look? I have no idea. But
yeah, Georgia-Auburn, they're scheduled to play this year
again. I think they are scheduled. I think that is their permanent West game.
Yeah. But, now it depends. I mean, the other thing that comes into play is when these games will happen.
Right. That's the question. Now,
that's
when
the other question.
What do you do
so,
with
So, I mean, you know, maybe if you're Florida, right, I was just looking at Florida's schedule for this year. Florida is scheduled to play Vanderbilt towards the end of the season.
Right.
Which is a good move for Florida, right? I mean, you know, you have a couple of tough games, and then you get Florida at the end of the season. It actually comes a week after the cocktail party,
right?
So, I mean, that's a good feel for Florida. But what if it gets switched up now? What if Florida is playing Vanderbilt to open up the season, which they may want? But then, you know, if you're adding another SEC team, what if it's Alabama at the end of the season?
That's a great point. I mean, look, this is going to have to be, as you add the schedule, as you add games, yeah, you're looking at the team's bye week. Not everybody has the same bye weeks. So now you're trying to figure out how you're going to have to reshuffle everything. Like
do
I said
they get
earlier,
bye weeks? I mean, they're starting
there's
later.
There's going to be one bye week.
It's
11 weeks, 10 games.
Okay.
So what you're going to be doing is you're going to be saying, okay, Where do your games, where are your open dates? From the 26th in, where are your open dates, right? Where's your bye week? And where are the games that are getting canceled? Where's your November game against, Louisiana Lafayette? Let's replace those and let's redo this. So you might have to have some shuffling where Alabama's like, well, the third Saturday in November, we're already booked for the Iron Bowl, but the second Saturday we were going to be playing Wofford. So now you can throw us a game against South Carolina, right? But South Carolina might be like, well, our second Saturday in November is not free. We were scheduled to play Florida. So now you have a you might have to just scrap it and start all over again. I don't have the schedule. Like making schedules is not the easiest thing to do.
It always sounds like it's easy.
It always sounds like it's easy, but it's kind of more complicated. But you know, look, you're not dealing with the like a monster truck show or a Rolling Stones concert that's like booked your stadium, right? I mean, like you're not dealing with like arenas in the NBA and places like that where they're like, we got other things that we're doing. You're dealing with football games that can be manipulated. So yeah, like Tennessee, Alabama might not be the third Saturday in October. They might have to be like the second Saturday in November or whatever. I hope they keep it the third Saturday in October. It's kind of where tradition. It used to be. There were years where it wasn't, but for the last couple of years it has been. So, but that's what the SEC is doing. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. As we continue along, it is Sports Map Radio Network.
Is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So at least we're getting, at least football is happening. College football is happening in some plan.
Well, there's a plan.
Right, at least there is some plan.
Whether that actually does happen, we keep having stories like Rutgers.
Yeah,
you know, keep popping up.
Oh God! But you know, like I said earlier, I'm glad the SEC is buying its time. I'm glad they didn't fall into the trap of we got to start on time, play on time. They said no. Let's chill for a second. We got some time here. We're not in any rush.
Yeah,
it's going to be weird to not have SEC football right away, and you know, Labor Day weekend and whatnot. But they're like, look, when we get to the 26th, then we're going to be like a rocket ship going to the moon. We're going to be playing. An 11-week, every SEC team is playing 10 conference game schedule. And if you're an SEC fan, I think you'll love it. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network.